Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, folks, in the second half of today's show, it's a great pleasure to have back on the show John Bursell. We're going to be chatting about the whole political landscape in Australia for the next hour. I want to get into a variety of things. I want to really talk about the state of our democracy, what's going on, what are the good things. I want to see some positive in what's happening. I know there's a lot of negative, and we always talk about the negative, but I think there's some positive things as well with the emergence of new political parties and, I guess, you know, so much dissent now really emerging on so many issues. And I think that's kind of the essence of democracy. You know, you have to start having dissent. You have to start having people willing to make a stand and actually make changes to their lives and take risks to bring about a better world. And of course, it's never going to be easy. That sort of thing is always hard, and quite often you fail, and that's part of it as well. You know, it's not about just some straight plain sailing thing where you just you know, you have a political aspiration and a movement and you win. Sometimes it goes on for years and years and you lose and you lose and you lose, but in the end you win. And I think over time we've seen that those who are on the side of justice and truth and freedom eventually do win. I mean, that is really the pattern of history. And on that note, let me just introduce John to the show. John, welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be back here, Edward. Been a long time.
Has been a while. What do you think of my take there on you know, the pattern of history, John? You know, I know you're a fairly positive guy and you're a very professional person. You're very busy. You've recently entered politics. You obviously feel that it's worthwhile making an effort.
I do. Obviously, you know, with the information state that we have in the world today, with everything we, you know, we say and do being watched, that does make you wonder whether we can change things, because they are obviously always ahead of the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is definitely some signs, you know, with the fact that so many more people are aware of what's going on in the world and in Australia, and they're more aware of the powers that we don't see. Yeah, I think there is some hope there, and definitely with the development of a few other parties in Australia and around the world, and it, you know, and there's lots of evidence that people are fighting to be represented in politics, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and on that note, you have now become a candidate for Bob Katter's party. And can you just run us through all the details on that?
Well, Katter's Australian party, and the only reason Katter's name is there at the moment is because he's well known. So the idea really was to give the party a lift by using his name.
Sure.
It's been around for some time now. And Bob's one of the few honest politicians we have in Australia. You know, arguably one of maybe two or three honest politicians that we have in the Australian parliamentary system. Honest, I mean, in that way, I mean, they're honest in they say what they think, and they're trying to represent their voters, and they don't use spin. They just get to the point and they say what they believe to be true, rather than following a party line or you know, creating something that's going to be good for the media.
Yeah.
You know, spin. So he's a great guy in that regard. And basically, he's so frustrated with the two-party situation in Australia, and he was a very popular politician in Queensland in his electorate, commanding about, you know, up to about 80% of the vote. He thought that he'd go on a campaign to firstly, you know, sort of spread out in state politics in Queensland, and then he's decided to go federal with the Australian Party. And the Australian Party's very similar views to a lot of the views of the Truth Movement, I suppose.
Okay.
In the fact that they've got a libertarian sort of outlook on things, they're nationalistic in their approach as well. I think most people in the Truth Movement value their sovereignty, because they see a world order or a world government as a large threat. So, you know, Katter's party is nationalistic in its approach. It's libertarian, it's an approach, but it's also got a very strong social equity and justice platform. You know, so it's very similar to my politics, which is nationalist, socialist, libertarian, which is quite a strange brand of politics. You don't really see that much, but I think on balance, that's the most sensible way of approaching the world.
Yeah, so you believe government is important. You place government, you give government a bit more credibility in your scheme of things than, say, the more extreme libertarian or even anarchistic libertarians, of which there are many, and many truthers probably fall into that camp.
As well, yeah. They do. But obviously I see government as important from the point of view of providing infrastructure that needs to be shared by everyone.
Right.
You know, so things like, and this is how I came to be running for Cunningham in the Illawarra, or the southern part of Sydney, down to the southern edge of Wollongong, is to that's based on infrastructure. It's based on an aviation platform that my association of engineers, the Australian Licensed Aircraft Engineers Association, has found support with Bob Catter and Nick Xenophon and a couple of other politicians within the parliament that isn't there with the major parties. In my view, most of the major party politicians and their platforms are very suited to the globalists and to the corporatists. So where Catter's got more of an approach of looking after the farmers and the workers and the infrastructure of the nation and keeping that in the hands of the people. Now, the only way you can keep the infrastructure in the hands of the people, in my view, is to do it by government control. You know, so that's where the anarchistic sort of view, I suppose, goes astray a little bit. If you let anything happen, anyone can have control, and I want the Australian people to have control of those key assets.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that resources, national resources, need to be managed by the government.
Representatives of the people, yeah.
Yeah, the government as government. And the government, of course, needs to be representative of the people. I guess that's where it all falls down, isn't it? Because, you know, it's supposed to be that way currently. If you just look at the surface view of the system, that seems to be the way it works. And yet, in practice, it doesn't seem to be the case, isn't it? I mean, it's like perception and reality just aren't matching.
That's right, and it's 100% true. And in the case of aviation, you know, we see more and more work going overseas.
Yeah.
We see a situation with, say, oil refining in Australia now being in a situation that most of it's going to be done in Singapore. So from a national strategic perspective, we're losing our infrastructure that we need to defend ourselves as a nation. If we can't, you know, maintain our own aircraft, and let's face it, in today's warfare, aircraft is really where most of the battle's fought. If we can't support our aircraft and refine our own fuel and make our own vehicles, say, for instance, then we're really in a very dangerous and precarious situation where we're relying on others to support us,
which,
you know, I don't think it's a smart thing to do as an island nation.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about government. We think, what is the role of government? And you know, I can just think of three subject areas that you and I have talked a lot about and have become quite passionate about. Where, you know, the government is not representing the people at all, and it doesn't matter whether it would be the Liberal Party or the Labor Party, none of them is likely to ever really be supporting what the people want. And I'm just thinking, and I've chosen this for example. One is in foreign policy, in terms of the way in which we relate to the US and global geopolitics and conflicts in the world. Our government has taken positions which is completely against what most people want. Another case would be, say, coal seam gas, which, I mean, it's so unpopular right across the country, and yet the government is still endorsing it, and we don't really have much clear indication that the Liberal Party would do any different. And another would be the carbon tax, which again is extremely unpopular, has always been unpopular, whether it's an emissions trading scheme or a carbon tax. Nobody wanted it. And this is the problem. People look at government and they say, well, this is supposed to be representative democracy. This government is supposed to represent us, but it just acts autocratically.
It does. I mean, there's clear evidence of that, and the issues you spoke of are really the primary issues. So how we address that, the only way we can address it is by creating new political parties, and parties that aren't controlled by, you know, corporate entities or you know, union bodies or whoever it might be. But, you know, they've got to be controlled by the people they represent. which is their electorates and what their electorates want. And we just don't see that anymore. Now, there can be an argument made for government to lead on issues that might not be popular to start with, but then through a process of education, say, for instance, about some complex issue of trade or complex issue of resources, like you talk about CSG, if the government says, right, we'll give rights for people to do exploration in coal seam gas, yeah, that could be okay for a period if it's not dangerous, to then, you know, find out what the resource is and how we can get it and look at the risk, do risk assessments and analyse the danger to society, and then educate the people about those facts. And then if the community behind the ideas, you know, then they go ahead and do it. But what we see is with coal seam gas, we see the evidence continually saying that it's a bad idea and that it's very dangerous. The government continues to support it when none of the people do support it. You know, in my electorate, I guess, you know, from my personal experience, it'd be over 90% would be against coal seam gas, but we still see the companies pushing ahead with it. Now, it has been stopped in the catchment area at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's always just, the next government away or, you know, the next time they put in a submission, the right person gets paid off and it'll go through. So it's still a very big risk. But at the moment, we've done reasonably well in our area because it's such an important issue
that
they know that the incumbent will get thrown out if it comes in. So, you know, sometimes a little bit of power in government when, you know, someone's seat's at risk. And that's what we see, this constant swinging between, different parties and different candidates. You know, Australia's now become this country where there's not really a government elected that anyone wants. It's the government that they least want that doesn't get elected, which is pretty poor, isn't it?
I mean, and isn't it incredible that one of the political parties, which is going to be on the ballot in this election, the WikiLeaks party, is led by a man who is effectively in house arrest in the most bizarre circumstances in London, and has been like that for the last year. I mean, we really have reached an incredibly strange moment in history, haven't we? I mean, I don't know whether to be really bleak and negative about it, or whether maybe to say, well, maybe this is actually some kind of turning point. I mean, what's your take on, what do you think about WikiLeaks as a political force?
Well, I haven't really had time to look into it.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I'm not seeing anything in the press about it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's obviously something good going on there if we're not hearing about it.
Yeah, so true.
You know, I've been very busy in the last 6 months educating myself on a few different things. I've done a diploma in occupational health and safety, and I've been doing a training and assessment course. And today I was involved in finalising some parts of the area management and fatigue management, also human factors course for Qantas Engineering. And, you know, so I've been involved in a lot of things, and I got involved with the Bob Catter Party, the Australian Party, through my association. So just having that on my plate, just with, you know, going to work and looking after kids and everything else, there's not enough time to look into everything. But I'm very interested in WikiLeaks, and I'm a great supporter of Julian Assange and Mr. Snowden as well. And I think it's amazing that our government is so inept and so gutless on these issues, you know?
Indeed. John, we're just going to break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Please stay with us. I'll be with John Bursell for the rest of the hour. We're going through some really interesting Australian news. Stay with us. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Oh,
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Today, my guest is John Bursell. John Bursell is running as a candidate for the Australia Party. And John, you will be on the ballot, correct? Now, are we talking here about a Senate seat that you're actually running for?
No, it's the House of Representatives. So Bob's plan was originally to field candidates in all 150 electorates throughout Australia. I don't believe he's going to get close to that, because obviously when you field a candidate, you know, they've got to be of a reasonable quality, or you can, you know, bring disrepute on the party. So
yeah, sure.
In the end, I think there's going to be about 80 candidates running around Australia. But the idea is really to get people elected in the Senate. You know, the Australian Party, Bob, the Katter's Australian Party, the KAP, wants to hopefully, you know, have up to 5 senators elected and possibly hold the balance of power. Wow. With the government taking the position of the Greens.
Wow.
Which, you know, personally, I mean, you know, I was a member of the Greens for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and the Greens have a lot of good things to say about certain aspects. But, you know, definitely the Australian Party's more my line regarding issues of libertarianism and, you know, also issues of nationhood, where I think the Greens are more globalists, and that's definitely an issue for me. And a lot of the Greens, in my view, you know, it might be a bit strong, but they're sort of, a lot of them are, knowing them and speaking to them, a lot of them are human haters. And the Australian Party's definitely not human haters. They think that the Australian population needs to increase. They think that we need to accept progress and rely on technology, you know, to find new ways of dealing with population growth. But they're definitely not an anti-growth party, which the Greens are. So, yeah, I think it'd be a better balance if you know, the KAP was in there, you know, and obviously the Greens will have some senators as well. But I don't think Yes. we can trust either of the governments to have control of the Senate.
Absolutely. Has there been any polling done on the Australia Party to suggest what sort of result they might get?
There has been, but it's sort of changed now with Rudd coming back to power. Yeah. Obviously, the Labor Party's a lot stronger now. I mean, people are scared of an Abbott government. I think basically most people think Abbott's a bit of a fool, you know, which I don't know if he is or isn't, but I'm just saying this is what the people say that I talk to. They're worried about Abbott being in charge of the Liberal government, so maybe if they had a different leader, things would be different. But they seem to like Rudd. So they see him as a nice guy that's, you know, more conservative economically than Gillard was. You know, they don't see him as controlled by the faceless men, whatever it is. He's popular. You just got to look at the figures. So since he's come back to power, I'm not really sure what the story is. But yeah, there were figures getting around that Bob could possibly get up around the 10% of the vote Australia wide. You know, in the places where he's running candidates, and in Queensland, quite a lot more than that. So
sure.
In New South Wales, you know, who knows? We might be talking, you know, between 2-5%. It's just so hard to say. And also we've had obviously Clive Palmer coming to the mix as well, who's fielding all these celebrity candidates.
Yeah.
You know, the Senate ticket's going to have hundreds of people on it. Like, I'm not sure exactly how many people there were, but we're talking about a ballot paper now that's 1.2 metres long or something, you know. So for the people in America, that's about 10 feet long. It's a pretty big paper. So it seems at the moment everybody's so frustrated with the government that everybody's trying to get in on the act and get into Parliament, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it's really important to understand that when you have big political parties, when you have like essentially a two-party system, those parties become so powerful and so kind of tapped into the financial corporate oligarchies that there is no way that the people who lead those parties can give you a genuine, real position on any topic. And you know, I find it incredibly heartwarming, for example, with Clive Palmer, to hear that he made a huge stir about being forced to go through a naked body scanner at the airport in Perth. And because I know that no other politician in the major parties would ever talk about this, they just go along to get along, right?
Yeah.
But you know, that's one issue. I really feel very, very strongly about it. But I think it's indicative of the fact that when you have more independent party. It's more people standing alone. They're not going to just toe the line. And I do think that that is actually a threat to the powers that be.
Bob's, the Australian party's position on these things is they're really against the nanny state in a big way. And right. Talking, I had a meeting with the other candidates in the Sydney, Southern Sydney area the other night, and I found those people some of the best people politically I'd ever met. And, you know, working class people, some business people, like a mixture of people, people that don't think that my views on geopolitics are crazy, people that actually want to hear what my views are about those things and actually value my perspective. So they're people with open minds, and they're people that know what we're told on the television is not the truth. And they're prepared to say so. Where, like you said, with the general, the mainstream politicians, they just they're very bland, and there's no real life there. You know, obviously, a lot of people think that Bob Catt is nuts because he speaks his mind and speaks the truth, but he's not. He's a guy that, you know, and maybe that appears nutty to the average person these days. Someone that's speaking the truth.
Yeah, it does. It's just so unusual. It's just incredible. Clive Palmer, again, last year he was talking about connections between the Greens and the CIA. And it was going, is this guy some kind of a nut? Well, no, you know, it's just talking about some things that he might have information about. Maybe it's wrong. But the point is...
You're not saying that the CIA might try to have influence within political parties in Australia, are you, Arrowood?
Yeah, it would just be so incredible, wouldn't it? Like, that could never happen.
They always have. Since the CIA existed, it's had a purchase in the Australian political parties, hasn't it? You know, we know. Anyone that's studied history knows that. It's a fact, you know?
And yet, if you're in the club...
But you're nutty if you say it.
Yeah. If you're sort of in the club of politics or media, you never talk about those things. If you do talk about them, you're immediately labelled as some kind of wacko. But look, you know, I tell you what, I'd like to get into like going through the policies that that the Australia Party represents, because, you know, I want to know whether I'd like to actually vote for them or not. So I'd like to actually go through with you like some of the topics that I think are important. So let's start with coal seam gas. Well, is there a policy on that?
In the core beliefs, there's a policy about, you know, people having a right to their own land and
and
the people having control and a say over their resources. So straight away, obviously, talking to the people at the meeting the other day that I went to, and remember, I've been thrust into this situation basically to support Australian aviation. And they're all against coal seam gas because what does it do? It violates the rights of the landholder in a lot of cases. It risks the country's natural resources and pastoral land, which the KAP is staunchly supportive of. It's also the money goes overseas because these corporations predominantly owned by overseas entities, and the resource goes overseas as well. So they're against that. So in every way, they're against coal seam gas. Obviously, if there was a situation where coal seam gas was safe, and it was done in a place where the people that owned the land were happy about it, and the people in the electorate were happy about it, and, you know, all the normal things we'd expect by a representative government, the government no doubt would support it. But that's not the case in any of those instances. So do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder whether the question about land titles is actually maybe even the most important part of that. And when we come back from the break, I'd like to actually just briefly address the question of land titles, because that seems to be the major problem that a lot of rural people have with coal seam gas, is they don't have any control over their own land. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
By morning, bitter by
Welcome back with Truth News Radio, and my guest today is John Bursell, running as a candidate for Bob Katter's Australia Party. John's been a great supporter of truth and justice. I've known John for 5 years now. It's been...
six and a half years.
Early 2007 when we first started doing stuff, yeah. Look, I'll tell you what, I'd like to just keep going there with that topic of the coal seam gas and the land tiles, because, John, I think, you know, it would be great if people could really control their land, but is that even feasible? I mean, would that actually have to be a change of the Constitution? Because how can you change a land title?
Well, the title issue is interesting. Like, I haven't looked into it in depth.
Yeah.
It's not really a big issue in my electorate. Well, it is for the people of Darks Forest, and there's a few other areas where it's a big issue. But, you know, the issue for me is the damage to the water catchment and the catastrophic damage to the environment and all those chemicals and everything else and the fracking. And it's just such a bad thing that, for me personally, the land title issue doesn't have to even be considered. But the thing is, it is very important in certain areas of Australia, obviously, especially in Queensland. Now, my understanding is that you only own the top portion under a Torrens title. You only own the top portion of your land, and the government has rights to the minerals under it. Now, I also believe there's people that think that that's intrinsically not lawful.
Okay, there's an interpretation of law there. That's right. I was talking to Brian Monk about this, and he was saying that they're actually arguing that even in the current status quo, they're arguing against the right of companies to come in, even if the company has bought the mineral rights from the government. He's arguing that they can't necessarily just come into your land unless you give them your permission.
Well, that's right. And if you stay in negotiation and you're not happy with the outcome of the negotiations, like if negotiations break down and you just refuse, I believe that then they can go around it and force their way. But if you stay in negotiations, but the negotiations aren't successful, then they can't come in. So, you know, that's what, you know, Lock the Gate was all about and all of that. But, you know, intrinsically, if someone's coming into your land and you know, using a portion of it to get access to those minerals, you can see why there's an argument about that. And obviously compensation and all those other things, should have to be paid if someone's going to destroy your land. And we know what CSG's done in Queensland. It has destroyed people's properties completely, made them worthless, you know. And that's something that also needs to be considered, whether it's right for someone to be able to come into your property and destroy your land that you own, you know, like, that seems to be a legal point to me. But, like, I'm not a lawyer, and, like I said, I don't really understand the nuances of it. But I believe there's people arguing that intrinsically it's simply they don't have the right to do it, you know. So anyway, Bob Katter supports the rights of the landholder, and he supports maintaining water. He's gone on the record about CSG, in the press numerous times.
Sure.
And like I said, the view of all the people that, and they're all in CSG electorates. The other candidates I spoke to are all staunchly against CSG. So that's all I can say about it.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems to me that the whole thing would have been less controversial, although still problematic. But I'm just saying it would have been less controversial for the government and for the whole mining industry if they'd simply respected people's land rights in the sense of not creating this kind of legal barrage against people who just don't want it. I mean, because I know a lot of farmers have cooperated with it, and a lot of farmers agree with it and are making money out of it. And that's maybe a bad thing.
Most of them that did agree to it regret it now from what it's done to their property, you know. So
I've heard.
So it's a funny situation. The arrogance of these companies is just amazing, isn't it? And they really did. They created a storm where they probably could have stealthily got away with a lot more.
Yeah.
But they just basically thought, no, we can do whatever we like. And consequently, there's been a great backlash, and I think it's really reinvigorated the political scene in so many ways.
It's forced people.
It's like the issues, other issues that we, you know, we are campaigning for, you know, truth and justice around the events of 9/11 and the war on terror and the illegal wars and information gathering by, you know, the intelligence agencies, all these other things, the nanny state, you know, like you said, with the body scanners, all these different things. They've created a wave of mistrust of the people, of the government, and it's caused people to get active. So it's sort of like that balance you were talking about, where truth always finds a path and right, you know, mostly wins in the end.
Yeah, sometimes it just takes a very long time to work itself out.
It's just the fact that all these corporations now have control of the media. That's the issue that we have. We just can't get the message out, you know. Like, I truly believe if Bob Katter's, you know, the Katter's Australian Party, the KAP got some good press about its policies and actually the news media paid some attention to it, it could seriously threaten the government, you know, at least for control in the lower house and in the Senate, similar to what we've seen in Britain, you know, with the party there. I mean, what's the name of that fellow that's in the European Parliament that always speaks the truth?
The Independent Party.
Didn't they get 20% of the vote or something?
Yes. I just can't remember the name off the top of my head, but
he managed to get enough publicity. I'm not really sure how he did it, but it's mostly through the internet, I suppose. I've seen most of it through the internet, and consequently, they managed to get a whole lot of the vote.
There's very, very little news reporting on that. You're right. It's interesting. Let's move on with some of the other policies of the party. How about the aviation industry? Since that's your main shtick, what are the changes there that the Australia Party wants to bring in?
Well, Bob Katter and Nick Xenophon supported a platform that was put forward. They put forward a bill to the Parliament to support Australian aviation and Australian aviation jobs, and it really stems, you know, from some of the Qantas disputes we've had recently. Now, Bob Katter's ancestors were actually involved with Qantas and shareholders way back in the day, and he's got a view that if you're going to be an Australian company, then you should employ Australian workers, but then on the other hand, if you're an Australian company and you employ Australian workers, then you should have advantages. Yeah. To having a business in Australia, you know, including, you know, having the best routes, tax advantages, all sorts of things. And also, obviously, we should provide good infrastructure to the Australian aviation industry so that it can thrive. Now, in Sydney at the moment, we're in a situation where we're very short on space. It makes doing business very expensive, and it also prevents people coming from Sydney because the congestion is so bad. You know, so, you know, Bob's supporting all those ideas of, you know, a new airport for Sydney, Australian jobs for Australian companies, and he wants to see Qantas supported. He wants to see them, have advantages, but also to make sure that they keep their maintenance at a high level and keep it in Australia. They keep their cabin crew and their pilots Australian-based, all those sorts of things. So it's really okay. just a nationalistic approach to aviation. Yeah. Obviously, Australia being a country that is so big, aviation is very, very important to our country and to its prosperous. It's prosperous nature, and we need to support that. And Bob and Nick Xenophon are really the only two politicians that have stepped forward. Adam Banth, also the Greens, has been supportive. There have been some other Greens that have been supportive around it as well. It's funny that Bob Katter actually gets on with the Greens on a lot of issues,
probably more so
than what the major parties do, the ones that are around social justice and, social equality and all the rest of it. He also gets on really well with the Aboriginal people.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Because he's a guy that deals with the situations in an honest way, and everyone likes honesty at the end of the day.
But he must be dead against the carbon tax, right? I mean, I can't imagine
he's a bit more of a skeptic than me. I think we're having an effect, but it's much less than what we're told. I don't support the carbon tax because it's a tax on life, and
sure.
I don't think I don't think we should have any world power taxing life because it gives them way too much power.
Well, even Kevin Rudd doesn't support the carbon tax now. So,
well, it's from the collective, yeah.
But anyway, we're just going to break. We'll be right back after this break. I'm talking to John Bursell. Stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And today we're going through some Australian news with my friend John Bursell, who is now running for the Australian Party, Bob Katter's Australia Party, for a
in
seat
Wollongong, basically.
In Wollongong in the House of Representatives. And we're just going through some of the policies. I'm very keen to know, you know, where parties stand and what they're willing to stick their neck out on. And I'd like to try and get a few more details from you on some subjects, John. I mean, let's move on to the carbon tax or the emissions trading scheme. You know, it keeps changing its name, doesn't it? I mean, Kevin Rudd has now scrapped the name carbon tax. He obviously knows that that's poison, and he wants to move straight into an emissions trading scheme. He thinks that's gonna sound better. It sounds softer, but it's you know, it's just the same type of arrangement, but with a free market or a floating price for carbon. But those of us who are against the whole concept of pricing carbon, really, to us, whether it's a carbon tax or an emissions trading scheme, we don't really give a stuff. We just think the whole thing's ludicrous. I mean, what's the Bob Katter line on this?
He's, you know, he's the same as me. He's an environmentalist. He wants to see the, you know, the Australian land and water resources respected and looked after. Also, obviously, he doesn't want to see it's the air polluted and everything else. But yeah, as far as I'm aware, he's against a carbon tax. And I know he's said that publicly many times.
Yeah.
You know, and they'd be all for repealing that. I don't think he wants any involvement in it. I think he wants to take more of an approach of let's, you know, I know for sure he's a big supporter of ethanol, of, you know, certain crops being grown in Australia to produce ethanol, you know, and looking at other ways of reducing pollution, you know, from an encouragement in research and development sort of approach. So besides that, I can't really say anything else about it, but I know he's against the carbon tax, and he's somewhat of a skeptic about global warming. I think he realises that there's some changes going on, but he's definitely not a supporter of the hysteria that we've heard over recent years.
Yeah, and I mean, what do you think is going to happen with carbon pricing after this election? I'm assuming that Liberal...
Well, what's the price at the moment? It's very low, isn't it? Only like about $6 a tonne on the international market?
Yeah, it's very low, isn't it? It hardly even makes any difference,
does
it?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of maybe a good gauge to see what the people out there that, you know, have got money are thinking about what's going to happen with carbon. Obviously, they don't think it's that big a deal, which is interesting, and that's where the argument comes from, let the market decide. Maybe that's not a bad way to go. It's definitely a better way to go than having a tax. I think some of the things Rudd's doing are quite good. And you've got to remember that from a political perspective, the KAP is actually old Labor in its attitudes.
Right.
You know, really the Labor governments we saw, you know, before the 70s, really, have very similar core values to what the KAP have. The thing that we see now with the governments, like I was saying before, is they're very globalist in nature, and they seem to support, you know, ideas that, you know, support the global governance, and you know that's what a lot of the people that listen to your show are worried about with the carbon tax.
Yeah.
It's a global governance issue. You know, it's an issue of power to these global entities that aren't elected, that could basically give control over how many people are on the planet with the price of carbon.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's yeah,
so
that's
if the market
true.
Controls it, then you know it's still very dangerous, obviously, because as things become more expensive, less and less people can afford to survive. So it's still a problem. I mean, it's really just like taxing water. It's no real difference.
But of course, Tony Abbott is committed to repealing it, and he's going to have trouble backtracking on that promise. I think it is a pretty solid core position of the Liberal Party that they will repeal the tax. I mean, do you think that there is any possibility that they would try to backtrack on that commitment?
I'm not sure about, as far as I know, that the Abbott policy or the coalition's policy is that they want to do things to reduce the carbon footprint of Australia through initiatives, not through taxes.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, and that's
yeah.
similar to what CATA's policies are. So, yeah, as far as, but with the Labor government, they want to obviously get involved in this international trading of carbon.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, depending on your view on whether or not you think that climate change based on, you know, CO2 is something that should be traded on, then I suppose that's whether or not you want to vote for the Labor government that's coming, you know, probably coming back to power. To me, it looks like, you know, the Labor government's not a bad chance to form a government now. Now, how that government's going to be set up, that's the thing that's really the issue again, I think. I think it's the issue who's going to control the Senate. But, yeah, who knows? I mean,
right.
Wouldn't you say that Rudd's looking sort of good now? He's on this bounce?
Well, that always seems to happen when there's a change of leadership.
Lasts about 6 weeks, so...
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously
months,
timed his resurgence to make benefit of that up to the election. And I find that public opinion is so manipulated, and our perception of public opinion through the polls that they run, I find that we're just sort of in a kind of a maze. We're like lab rats, you know, with all of the polling and all of the media and all of the stuff that they're telling us what we think all the time. And we don't even have a chance to know what we think before we're told, oh, you know, 60% of people think Rudd's doing a good job. Oh, do they? Oh, okay. Wow, I guess I should too then. You know, it's like...
Well, man, but it's funny that I don't know, you know, what leads what, but definitely the average person out there seems to like Rudd. I mean, Gillard was universally hated, and you know, whether it's the corruption that she was involved in, you know, we talked about that a few times, you know, whether it was not the, you know, the way that she came to power, the way that she spoke annoyed a lot of people, you know. I don't know what it was, but she was not liked at all, was she? And
and she used a lot of tactics which seemed a bit cheap. I mean, you know, anyone who went after her, she accused of being a misogynist. You know, I mean, like this.
She did. I mean, well, even that knitting shot just before she. I don't get it. But
yeah.
Anyway, I rated her as a pretty good debater as a politician. But she seemed to, once she came to power as the prime minister, with all that support from, you know, some of the unions that. You know, I'm not too friendly with, you know, the Australia's workers workers union. You know, people like Paul Howes and all those sorts of guys. They're really slimy fellows, and they were the ones that put her in power. So she was really beholden to them, and I think that's why she became the person she was. She really couldn't do what she wanted to do. She was really just doing what those faceless men wanted done.
Absolutely, John. Just very briefly, because we're just almost at the end of the hour. But I just want to sort of touch on foreign policy, and I know, you know, you've got very strong views on a lot of things which are very controversial and some people would call totally fringe, right?
Yeah.
You know, and in a dismissive...
Everyone I know pretty much can't find an argument with most of my views.
Yeah, yeah.
Most,
I mean,
people in private, you know, that get to know me and understand what's going on in the world and see a bit of the history, you know, have a pretty warm, you know, sort of relationship with the way I see the world, I suppose. They don't really want to know about it, maybe, because it's a bit too dark. But let's face it, the world's pretty dark.
It certainly is. And so, I mean, obviously you're in this party, so I would assume that they are comfortable with you having the views you do, for example, about 9/11. I mean, you've been very public about it. You're a public figure on that topic.
Well, I made sure that when I sent them all applications that I mentioned it all and told them that they should have a look, and, you know, and I made sure that my union secretary, that also, you know, doesn't think I'm nutty,
okay,
suggested I should join the party. My president and all the other people that I associate with all put me forward as someone of good character and good repute, and they're all very interested in, like I said, hearing what I have to say. Like, they're not, you know, obviously not supporting those positions publicly, but
yeah,
Bob Catter believes in the right of the individual to have opinions and okay, to speak the truth and to speak their mind, and I think that's why he was okay with me running, you know, for his party.
Yeah,
which, and I think shows the sort of guy he is.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think that you know, that's a really good indication of the fact that the fact that you being a strong public figure on some very, very controversial topics are in that party is good in itself. I don't expect the Australia Party to have a position on these topics, but on some aspects of foreign policy,
well,
I'd like
to... supporter of the American alliance, but I'm also a supporter okay, of the American alliance, you know, but I'm also someone that wants to expose the crimes, you know. His view is with trade, he'd have a much different trade position with the US, and you know, he's very pro-Australian, you know, so he wants to look after the Australian interests. Now, as far as the wars go and everything else, you know, you can't be expert on everything, so obviously those sorts of things are things for governments to consider, not for people that are running for government, especially in this situation at the moment. We're withdrawing from most of the theatres of war, so, which is a good thing, you know. Obviously we're on the wind down from 9/11 and all the things that went with that. And, I don't really know what he thinks about those things, but I've done the best I can to make sure he was aware what I think about them, so.
Yeah, and the main thing is that you stay true to what you believe in, and as long as you can do that, I think we can start to move forward a bit. You know, I think that with people who represent the views of some of the people who feel totally disenfranchised these days actually getting into politics, and I'm also thinking, you know, Julian Assange as well, even though we might say, oh, well, you know, they haven't touched this issue, they don't talk about 9/11, yeah, but it's a major step forward.
Well, the thing is that the average person out there has lots of questions about those events, Harrowwood.
Yeah.
We know that, don't we? From experience, on the street talking to people over years and years and years.
We do. And unfortunately, we are at the end of the hour, John. It's been really great talking to you, mate.
Yeah, it's been good talking to you too. Sorry I'm not, don't have more to say, but I'm only going to say what I know.
Great. No, it's been awesome. Okay, that's it for this week, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a great show. Thank you, John, and we'll be back next week.